Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today's actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.
Welcome, everybody, to a very special episode of Positively Trek. Those of you who have been noticing your podcast feed has not been including Positively Trek lately should know, if you don't know by now, we're on a bit of a hiatus. We're kind of taking a pause on new episodes until around the new year. We're kind of revamping some things, taking a bit of a break. That said, we will be doing very special episodes between now and then. And if you're a kid of the 90s like me, you know what a very special episode is. And this is one of them. We are going to be talking about Nana Visitor's new book, Star Trek Open a Channel, A Woman's Trek. An incredible new book by Kira Nerys herself, Nana Visitor. If you have not picked up this book, you really need to do it. It's wonderful. It's terrific. Every Star Trek fan should read this. So we have a very special guest today to talk about this book. But before I tell you who that is, I think you can figure that out by now, I hope. Let me introduce my co-host for this episode, Brandi Jackala. Brandi, welcome back to Positively Trek.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Because, you know, when you hinted that we were going to possibly have an interview with someone special, I didn't know for sure who it might be, but I figured it out.
It's Nana Visitor, guys.
Yes! It's Nana Visitor. Yes. It is. It's Major freaking Kira. Sorry. Colonel. Freaking Colonel Kira. Also, there were very special episodes in the 80s, too. Okay?
That's true. Yeah.
And usually it denoted something bad.
Yeah.
It's like, this is a very special episode of the Facts of Life.
Oh, man. That was a dark one.
Yeah.
I know the one of which you speak. Yeah. There were a few, but mm-hmm. if it's the one I'm thinking of, oof.
Yeah. It happened on Different Strokes. It happened on all of the sitcom-y things.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But we get it all.
We get Nana Visitor. I'm so thrilled to be able to talk to her. So what are you waiting? What are you hearing us yammer on for? Let's get to that interview. Let's get right into it and welcome the amazing Nana Visitor to Positively Trek. Today, we are honored and so happy to welcome a true Trek legend to Positively Trek, Nana Visitor, Major Kira. Pardon me, Colonel Kira herself, to talk about her new book, Star Trek Open a Channel, A Woman's Trek. Nana, it gives me great pleasure to say welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. I'm very, very pleased to be here speaking to both of you.
And yeah, of course, Brandi Jackala is with us here, as we talked about at the beginning, and we're both going to be talking to Nana and about this book, which, first of all, right off the bat, I just want to say, I'm not sure what my expectations were going into this book, but whatever they were all blown out of the water by, this incredible book, which, any of you listening, if you haven't read this yet, let me start off right at the top by going on the record and saying, you have to go buy this book. You have to pick it up. You have to read it. It is incredible. Absolutely.
As Brandi is displaying right now.
Absolutely.
Yes, I know we got the digital copy, but I'm like, nope, nope, nope. Get in the book. Get in the book.
It's a beautiful book. It's just beautifully published. Yeah.
It's a work of art.
Yeah. And thank you, Dan. I don't think anyone knew what to expect, including me when I started writing this, but this is the way it evolved. From a book that was supposed to be very simple, maybe a paragraph on each woman, it became really speaking of our times, of how Star Trek really is such an amazing way to look at where women were and are. It was interesting to put those particular lenses on my eyes and look at all these different shows. It was quite amazing.
Well, I guess that brings me to my first question, which is kind of wondering about the origin of the book, the genesis of this, because I understand it was originally going to be published under Eagle Moss's imprint, Hero Collector, and then of course there's that whole situation. How did this book come about?
So the one thing that stayed the same from its inception was the editor, Ben Robinson. Mm. And Ben is the one who had this idea that a book about the women of Star Trek should exist. And he also thought that it shouldn't be done by a man. So we spoke. And he told me the ideas that he had for the book. And I said, well, that's interesting. And yes, I would like to do it. But how about this and this and this? And to his credit, he let me go. And it became a very different book than what it was originally supposed to be.
Oh, that's really cool. Yeah. Because I can see the kind of bones of that, right? Where it's like talking about each character, but you go mm-hmm. into such depth and such amazing stories with each of the characters and kind of the broader overall story of Hollywood, basically, over the course of, like, Star Trek is so unique that it stretches right from the 1960s to 2024. It really paints this picture of Hollywood, and you've put together an incredible, well-researched piece of writing here that just blew me away.
Thank you so much. And after all, Hollywood is a system. It's unique, but certain things about it are not. How systems work and how people get lost in them and how people have to find their way. And it's really about that as well. And I have some people who aren't Star Trek fans who have said, you know what, I find it interesting just on this one level. And my secret hope is that they then go and discover Star Trek from what's been written as a fascinating entity in itself, as I found it to be when I started this book and I thought, well, yeah, but I don't have to watch all the episodes. I thought I could. I was doing interviews with the women, and I thought, and it wasn't too long before I realized that would be impossible. So the book took a long time because I had lots of research to catch up on.
I'm curious as to what your writing process is like. Do you have a certain atmosphere that you set for yourself when you were doing your writing, or a certain room that you wanted to be in, or a certain mindset that you put yourself into?
To be honest, it was such an overwhelming idea to do this book that most of the time, first of all, the room was this, which looks like a big room. It's not. It's actually very tiny. It's 6 feet by 9 feet. And it was the room. It's at the bottom of the house next to the garage. And it's the room I would descend the stairs to do my work and to watch the episodes and to do the research. And when I needed to find a book, when I had an interview with someone and went, I obviously don't know enough about this. This is where I read the books. But a lot of the time, I found reasons not to be in this room. I'd go, you know what? I think the dogs need grooming. I'd better wash and cut them. We have two standard poodles. So that would take a good part of the day. Or suddenly I'd find, you know, I need to do a deep clean of the kitchen. Something to avoid actually getting down to work. But then once it would be hours. I would go under this and it would take me under this fascinating, complicated puzzle of the influence of the culture, this show that was showing the future. And it was women who were doing both things, having both things influence their lives. So I would be caught in that and stay in that for hours and hours and hours. But getting to that point, actually walking down the stairs was the hard part.
Yeah, it sounds very similar to my process.
Same. Actually, that was a little bit my approach when reading the book, because I was trying to read the digital copy and it just wasn't working for me because of how it was formatted. And so, I was at a convention the weekend before the book came out, and I plugged it during our Women of Trek panel that I was on with two other women. So yeah, one of the few Star Trek panels we had that time. And I thought, I'm just going to wait until it comes out and then I'm going to get the actual book. And I started it while I was sitting waiting for my car to be serviced. I took that whole thing with me in a book bag.
Wow.
And then when they told me that I was done, I'm like, no. And I had to close the book and go back home. And then I spent the rest of the day, well, not the entire day, but I spent several hours after that finishing the book because I simply couldn't stop. I couldn't stop except to eat. I stopped to eat. I stopped to use the restroom when I needed to. But other than that, my husband would peek in and say, still reading? I'm like, yes, Dave, you have no idea. You have no idea what I'm doing here. This is an amazing thing. This is like one of the freaking most amazing things I've ever read. So yeah, my husband's very supportive and he was raised by women. So he didn't have any negative male influences when he was being brought up. But yeah, it was that was the experience. It's like, I need to do this. I need to do this. I need to do this. I'm reading something else. Why am I reading something else? I need to do this. I know this is coming up. And then I just started it. It was boom, boom, boom. Can't stop.
I love that. Yeah. I had a similar experience with my husband. Just, you know, as I was doing this work, I would discover that I was caught in the amber of the 80s or 90s still in my own life. And I'd run to Matthew and go, wait a minute. I just realized something that is no good for me. And I found him to be so responsive. So it was like, I think we just need to communicate things more. I yes. really do. Yeah.
Yes.
And woman to woman about Agreed. Where exactly shame belongs. And it's usually not with us when something has happened. Especially with young women, I think it's like an honor and a privilege to be able to give life experience to other women and to everyone, really. I mean, just intergenerationally, that's important.
Mm-hmm.
Agree. I think part of the problem is that the generation, you know, I'm Gen X, was born in the early 70s, and Dan, you're not too far behind me.
but elder millennial or geriatric millennial or whatever they call us now.
I always get confused about what all these, where you end and stuff, who's who.
I don't know why we have to put boxes. I don't know why we have to put these things in boxes, but someone likes to organize boxes of how people should be. But but as young women in that time, and I'm sure that this was probably true for you to some at some point, Nana, is that we are taught to mask. We are taught to mask our feelings. We are not allowed to act out, to have tantrums, to be upset about anything. We are supposed to act like perfect little ladies and do what we are told. And I have had a hard time lately realizing that I'm still doing that from time to time, even knowing that it's a thing. Like I earlier today, I apologized to Dan saying, I might get emotional. I might cry, just fair warning. And he's like, you don't need to warn me. it's not a thing. And then I realized that's another masking thing.
Yeah.
Is trying to make other people comfortable and not being who I am.
Well, you mentioned something. Why do we have this Gen X, this, that? And it's because we are acknowledging that the culture of our time has a huge effect on us, and probably more than it needs to. And that's what funnels us into these, boxes of you're Gen X, you're millennial, whatever it is. And I think that we can be much more fluid in who we are if we, and it's not like we have to fight anything, but we can just acknowledge to ourselves, wait a minute, where's that thought coming from? Where's that thought for Brandy coming from that she's got to apologize for having an emotion? The most human thing there is.
Yeah. And I got big ones. I got big ones. I'm either fortunately or unfortunately, depending on who you ask, overflowing with empathy. I cannot turn it off. So it's just like, I feel everything all the time. There is no off switch. And people don't know how to handle that a lot of the time.
Yeah.
But that's their issue.
Yeah, that is their
Absolutely.
Issue. It took me until my 40s to figure that out. But yeah.
Absolutely. No, that's all. And it's funny, Brandy, you brought up boxes too, because that's a major theme in the book as well, is the boxes that the various people, women, have to be put in Hollywood. And like, if you're not the sexy one, you're the best friend, or you're the quirky sidekick kind of thing. And I thought that was really interesting. And it really crystallized a lot of the things that, like, when I'm watching television as, you know, a know-nothing kid, I'm absorbing all of this. I'm taking all of that in, but not on a conscious level.
Yes.
And then when I grow up, you know, I'm, oh, what character is this? Oh, this is the one I'm supposed to respond to this way to, or this is, you know. And I love this in that it's such a splash of cold water to kind of make you unpack those things and examine those things. And I just think that's such a gift. And I guess where I'm going with all of this is, like, this feels like a PhD thesis. Like, the research and the work that goes into this, the deconstruction of all of these things is just so mind-blowing. And like, I really wish I'd read this when I was, like, 15 or 16 or something, when, you know, I don't know, Seven of Nine comes on screen and I, you know, I'm like, oh, well, obviously they're trying to build up the ratings and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, I'm responding to this character this way. And I think this is such an important way to look at these things. You've really kind of opened up those boxes, if that makes sense.
Well, that's the channel that I want to open. And it's just awareness. It's just thinking about it for ourselves and for each other. It makes such a huge difference. And I took it really seriously. I mean, writing a book about Star Trek, that's an important communication. And to me, it's not something you do lightly. I took it very, very seriously.
And I think one of the things that really struck me as well is the tone that you strike with it. It's very frank. It's very to the point. There's not a lot of dancing around things, which is really refreshing. And like, I'm a huge Trekkie. I've collected a whole bunch of behind the scenes books over the years. And it's really interesting to me, the stories that are included in the official accounts and the stories that are excluded. For me, I was shocked to read, and sadly, I haven't read Grace Lee Whitney's autobiography, and I think that's something I need to rectify. For example, the story of the Enemy Within, where the evil Kirk sexually assaults Yeoman Rand, and they had to get the scene done before lunch. So William Shatner walked up and slapped Grace Lee Whitney to elicit the emotions needed for the scene. And, you know, I've read probably 10 or 15, you know, behind the scenes accounts of the original series put out by the official publishers. I've never seen that story before.
Well, that's from her book.
Yeah.
That is from her book. And her response to it was, thank goodness he knew what I needed in the moment. Oh. And to me, that was the heart clutching.
Yeah.
Because I'm pretty sure he probably wouldn't have done it to one of the other men. But I'll tell you, CBS read every word of this and never said, no, let's not say that.
Mm.
That was amazing to me.
That is incredible. And I feel like that's a huge change and a very welcome change. Because yeah, this is an official licensed book. There are lots of unlicensed Star Trek books, but this one is, you know, vetted, approved by the powers that be. And I've got to be careful how I say this. I'm so happy to read that story in here. Not exactly what I mean, but you know what I mean. Like, I'm so happy that it's getting the light shone on it that it should have from the beginning.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. And always with the added mention that it was the times that was acceptable. It was all acceptable. When I look back, when I read her book, I was looking through the eyes, and she wouldn't have felt sad about it. She obviously didn't. She felt good about all of it. I didn't for her, but that's because I'm coming from this much more aware culture that we have right now.
That's an interesting way to put it, because I remember that scene. When I was a child, we watched Star Trek together. It was in syndication by the time I was born, and I don't know a time before Star Trek. It has always existed in my life. And my parents, you know, it'd be on every day of the week. It's like right after school, Star Trek.
Yep.
And weekends, you got extra Star Trek. So, but when I saw that episode, it really bothered me. And I didn't really say anything about it because, again, to not act out, not to get upset, all of those things. And the same thing happened with, oh my gosh, I hate when I do this. I have ADHD and sometimes I can't remember the thing that I was going to say, but it's that episode in season 3, Dan, you know which one I'm talking about, where a woman can't be captain.
Oh, Turnabout Intruder. Yeah.
Turnabout Intruder.
Yes.
I knew there was Intruder in the title and I couldn't remember the rest of it. And as a, you know, like a 4-year-old, of course, it doesn't have the same weight. But later on, when I was about 6 or 7, I'm like, what? Who says I can't be a captain? Just because I have different body parts? What?
Wow, at 6 or 7, that's pretty cool.
Well, my parents were, they were very into Star Trek and they held the same values.
Mm.
And so and my mom, she was outspoken, that's putting it mildly, and she was just like, honey, you can be whatever you want to be. If you want to be a captain of a starship, you can. So don't listen to that man saying that women can't be captains.
That I heard from so many people, a parent saying something like that is hugely impactful. And then you come up against life, you know, if you're born in a certain time, and it may be more of an uphill battle than you thought. But just the idea as a child that you weren't told stay in your lane is huge, huge from all the people that I spoke to.
Yeah, that was a running theme in my life from watching Star Trek. It's a lot of my ethics and morals are based on Star Trek, and I don't think that's a bad thing because it shows us what we can be. It shows us the good that we can do if we choose it, if we can stop fighting and just do things.
And it's also a discussion that happens in families because they're watching Star Trek together, even though it was a dated episode with this idea that women can't do certain things. It gave your mother the opportunity. It gave you both the opportunity to talk about it. That's huge. Whether you agree with the episode or not, it's that kind of familial conversation that it started that's a big deal.
One thing you mentioned was the time, right? Like the things were different at the time and stuff. I think one of my favorite things is right around page 200, when we kind of shift into the modern era of Star Trek and stuff, how much of that has changed. And I think one of my favorite bits in the book was your conversation with, I think it was Jess Bush. You were talking about the quality that actors, women actors had to have in the past was that question, you know, are they effable, right? And
right.
I think her answer was like, buildings would burn down if I were asked that question.
I can still remember that. Because we were on a Zoom call. I remember the shock and awe on her face when I asked her and I told her that that was something we all dealt with. We always had to keep that in mind. And that was normal talk. And that would be feedback from an agent. And that just blew her mind. And it made me so happy to see that it was a shocking idea for her.
While we're in the modern era, I really appreciated the chapter on Mary Wiseman because Tilly is my avatar. She,
yes.
Here we go. I knew this would happen. I'm a curvy girl, you know, I'm not a skinny person and I'm not ever going to be a skinny person again. I was skinny when I was young and then my metabolism shifted and there's some health issues that are related to that. And when I saw Tilly, I saw myself in Star Trek for the very first time. And I appreciated that conversation because now, you know, obviously I think she's amazing. And Mary Wiseman is, I worship her as a goddess, as I should. And being seen and being able to tell someone that, I wish I could. I kind of told her through her husband, which I was on a podcast with a while back. And it was life-changing for me. It's like, yeah. Yeah, we have all shapes and sizes in Starfleet. We have someone who is kind of coded as neurodivergent, and I'm neurodivergent. And you wouldn't know it now, but I was born with red hair, and this is the funniest part. My mother's maiden name was Tilly. So,
wow.
So there were so many levels on which it hit me, and I just ate up. I read that chapter like three times over the course of a day because it just, again, brought back that feeling of, yeah, I'm more than what I look like. I'm more than what my age is, what my weight is, any of those things. And Mary Wiseman embodies that for me. Tilly embodies that for me. And so that was one of my favorite things, and it made me cry like I'm doing right now.
Yeah, well, it when I interviewed her, it was a filmed interview, which we may make this a documentary. I hope that we do at some point. Made her cry, too. She had a very difficult road with it all and a lot of comments that were very unkind. And she had to find it in herself to do it for other people, to be there and to do her job, and to remember people like you who got courage from her doing what she did, and she would do it for those people. And that's really just, I mean, that's pretty heroic to me.
I feel like we as Star Trek fans, and just, you know, apologies to everyone, I'm going to go on a little bit of a rant here about fandom and that sort of thing. Like, we as Star Trek fans really pride ourselves on what we like in Star Trek, or a lot of us do, which is, you know, this progressive show that from the very beginning, in to varying degrees, showed a progressive view of the future and all of this stuff. And I think one of the things this book does brilliantly is kind of make us realize that, yes, it did do that in a lot of ways, but in a lot of other ways, it was still in that world of Hollywood and all of those things that we aspire to or strive for. They're not always baked into the product from the beginning. And I mean, the struggle of women, of course, in the original series, very much on display in the stories and the characters of the original series, but as you point out, in some ways, still more progressive than maybe the show on the next channel over.
For sure.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think sometimes we as fans need to be a little bit more introspective about our thing and the thing we love and see in the areas in which it can improve. 90s Star Trek was hugely influential to me as far as my morals and what I believe. And at the same time, looking back on it, there's still areas where, like, oh, wow, I didn't even clock that was kind of a problematic thing there. But, you know, now with a new perspective looking back, oh, okay, I see. And I wonder in the future, that's still going to be a needle that continues to move. And I think a lot of people in fandom nowadays, modern Star Trek is able to talk about these issues more directly than they were in the past. They kind of did more allegorical in the past, and now we actually have, you know, a trans character, a non-binary character. And the sad pushback that I see from Star Trek fans, some Star Trek fans, shows me that they didn't get it that first time around, what Star Trek was trying to say. And that makes me a little sad, but there's also a huge segment of fandom that does get it and is along for the ride. And those people need to be louder.
My feeling is that progress is slow. And when Deep Space Nine came out, we were the Star Trek that was ruining Star Trek. But the Next Gen came out and they were the ones that were ruining Star Trek. The new one is always the one ruining it. My character got a lot of pushback. It was not acceptable. It was threatening. It was bad. My character was awful and I was awful doing it. There were people who liked it, but a lot didn't. Now we're at a time where everyone has a voice you hear because of the internet and all the chat rooms and all this stuff. So it's just blown up so much. And I think Star Trek is bigger than ever. So it has a more rowdy element to it. And I dare say that, like, it took my character. I noticed it. I noticed the change when it started streaming on Netflix. And I was at a convention and a 15-year-old boy came up to me and said that he had a crush on my character. And that usually that was not the case. Not the case at all. And I started to see a shift for my character then. Who knows when this shift will happen for Discovery and the new Star Treks that are out there and that are yet to come. It may take a longer time before people go, oh yeah, that's just the way it is. That's Major Kira? Yeah. Now I have You know, a man coming up with his wife and his kids going, "This is my Kira. I had a crush on you when I was a kid. Now this is my Kira." And it's like, that's great. Because I know what he means. He means a woman that can speak her mind and is her own person, and they're cool with each other. So that's pretty great. So I think every new idea, every new Star Trek has had the shock of, oh, this isn't my Star Trek. I don't like this. This isn't what we're meant to be. And so many people they mistake their preferences and their ideas for their identity. So then it gets scary for them because they feel like their identity is being challenged. It's just their thoughts and ideas. That's all.
I love that. Yeah, that's amazing. I was thinking back as I was reading this, I was thinking back to some of the times when I was watching Star Trek. And one of the things for me, this wasn't the first time I saw the episode. It would have been a repeat at some point, but the episode Rejoined with Dax and her former wife from when she was a man. And like I said, not the first time I watched it, but on a later watch, I remember the scene where they come together for the kiss. And I remember, like, for half a second, the thought going through my mind, like, why are they being so hesitant? Like, I get what the big deal is in the story, but why are they making it such a, oh, right, it's two women, like 1994, right? Okay. And it just, like, it clicked, like, oh yeah, this was such a huge deal at the time. And
huge.
I loved that it wasn't a big deal when I was watching it later.
Yeah. I just watched a movie because it's, you know, Halloween time, and it was a scary movie. This movie that I did called The Sentinel. And it's the idea that someone is at the, someone from the Catholic Church has to watch over this building because it's the gateway to hell. And at the end of the movie, the gates open up and you see people with physical issues, little people, murderers, and two lesbians. And that's what hell consists of. It was like, yeah, this was done in the 70s. So yeah. It just 20 years later, still a kiss between two women was, even if they were aliens, it was a big deal.
Yeah, I still remember that. And you relay the story in here that always speaks to me about the production assistant who takes the call from the guy saying, you know, complaining, oh, my kid had to see those two women kissing. And the PA says, you know, if one had shot the other, would that be okay? Oh, yeah, that would be fine. Like, well, there we go. Like, that says everything we
right.
need to know.
Right. It does.
Yeah. My opinion on that has always been, why are you thinking so much about someone else's romantic or sex life? What is it to you? Why don't you focus on your life?
Yeah.
Because this has nothing to do with you.
Yeah.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today's actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.
Positively Trek comes to you each week thanks to the efforts of our amazing Patreon members. If you'd like to help support the show, simply visit patreon.com/positivelytrek. Join at any level to get early access to ad-free episodes and exclusive content. For higher tiers, we offer shoutouts, associate producer credits, and more. We appreciate each and every one of our listeners. Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode. Live long and prosper. So you actually answered a question that I'd had on my mind, because I had heard in another interview you did that a lot of these interviews were filmed. So, and they didn't ask the question, but you kind of already answered it. Would you be open to doing like a documentary or something like that, a filmed documentary? And like, I can put my vote forward and say, I would love to see that.
What's important to me is that I would be able to get on the sets of the new shows and film, you know, the women there. There are so many women that I didn't have access to, or, you know, a few that didn't want to do it. But mostly, you know, there would be a connection that would just, it's like, you ask the agent, you know, would she be interested in an interview? And I'm sure you've had the experience. Most people go, oh my God, another more talking about Star Trek? No, I don't think so. You know, so, but the agent goes, oh no, not another Star Trek thing. So there were just a lot of people I never got it. I would have loved to talk to Whoopi Goldberg, but all that, I need to have access. If I have access, then that will make sense to put the documentary forward. But it needs to be everybody.
Well, in light of the reaction that a lot of agents give, thank you so much for doing this interview. I love it.
Me too. Me too. Well, it's been over 30 years of speaking to people about this, and it's an endlessly, obviously, fascinating subject, even more so now that I've really done a deep dive on it. But Star Trek, it's incredibly important to me.
It's incredibly important to me, too. I think we can all agree on that.
Yeah, it's a great frequency that we can speak on. It's just great.
One of the things that was a troubling chapter for me, and not in a way that like some of the other, you know, really, dark things and like the Grace Lee Whitney bit that we talked about earlier and that sort of thing, was the chapter on Star Trek Enterprise. And I've always, from when I first learned what the Bechdel test was, for example, and I looked at the Star Trek series over the years, how the original series, like, just, you know, below the bottom floor, if it's possible, kind of thing. TNG better, Deep Space Nine much better, Voyager just incredible, and then Enterprise brings it right back down again. And I've always wondered about, you know, with all of the progress made with Voyager and that sort of thing, how could they let that happen? And it was eye-opening and disturbing to see some of the comments a little bit that Brannon Braga made, very open and very frank comments by Brannon Braga, which I'm very like grateful for.
I was so impressed by him.
Yeah. But that they kind of at the time figured, well, we've done all that. We accept that as read. Now back to the adventures and boys being boys stuff. And I'm like,
that they felt they did all that work. Voyager was all about women, but that just makes a great point that you can never, you know, let your foot off the accelerator for any of these issues. Mm-hmm. The minute you do, it can go straight back in ways that you don't foresee. So I think that was really interesting. And I'll say this, I was interviewed by a young woman who's an engineer, such an impressive title, thing, job she does. And she said, well, I loved the character, this Vulcan, because I felt like an outsider in a man's world in my job. And to Paul, showed me that she was kick-ass and she didn't quit. And I thought, good point. So even though it wasn't instructive of how, you know, how women can function well in that world, it represented this young woman, and I'm sure many others. I wish I'd known that for the book, but these are the conversations you start having when you bring stuff up. It's like, yes, answer back, tell me. No, you did. She said you didn't find anyone for T'Pol. I was like, no one said that was, you know, their avatar. And she said, well, it was for me. So that's, to me, that's a good conversation.
That's awesome. Yeah. Which makes me wonder, it's probably a question you're sick of hearing. And I can't imagine with all of the work that you've put into this, how your answer could be anything other than what I suspect it is. But what about a follow-up to this with the people that you've missed or people that didn't get back to you?
Well, that's, I think, the great thing, because I go, did they not want to speak to me because they thought it was going to be some extreme book in one way or the other, too much fluff or too much vitriol, something? And maybe with realizing, you know, sometimes you have to show what you mean. You can't just say it. And maybe the book will encourage more communication. So that although now, right now, as you say that, I think my dogs need grooming, but I can see I can see where I would very much want to get to everybody. There are many specifically that I didn't get a chance to talk to.
An incredible, incredible book. I could talk for hours about like the individual stories in here. I loved, for example, your discussion of Catherine Janeway and the kind of character that she was, and at the same time, you know, just right smack in the 90s there, you know, like 10 different hairstyles over 15 episodes in season one kind of thing, or whatever the number was. And, you know, all these little things that, as you rightfully say, you know, Patrick Stewart would not have had that issue. Heck, you know, William Shatner didn't have that issue. They got his hairstyle and that was it kind of thing.
And that was it. Yeah.
No.
Yeah. Until she finally said, you must leave me alone and let me own this character. And thank goodness they listened to her. They did. They backed off. So we got Janeway. That influenced countless people. Such an important role.
Which actually the final chapter in the book too, which you say is possibly the most important chapter in the book.
The audience members that I got to interview.
Yeah, the inspired and the inspirational.
I wish they were all in there. They were all incredible stories. So many, in Europe, on ships, on Zoom. There were so many. And of course, you know, books have to be edited. But there were one who still blows me away is the young Army chaplain.
Yeah.
Chaplain O'Malley, who just, and so many people I spoke to have incredibly difficult jobs, incredibly important jobs, responsible for many people's lives, literally. And they have Star Trek as a basis of their ethics, like you, Brandy. It's how they organize their thoughts to do what they do. Wow, Roddenberry. That's pretty incredible.
Who knew that little show would spawn all of this?
Right?
One that they had to fight to get a season 3.
Yes. And season 3 is it's a place of a lot of shows that are pretty funny, actually, but it doesn't matter. They were still Star Trek. Still Star Trek. They got more 60s, but it was still Star Trek. And it laid this foundation for this community and these shows and these ideas and this pushing of the envelope that Star Trek does.
It did that a lot. Because I remember watching Let That Be Your Last Battlefield as a child, and I did not have to have anyone tell me that this was a metaphor for racism. And racism was not a thing in our house. That did not exist. And if any of us, sometimes my dad, would say something that would be inappropriate and my mother would shut him down so fast and he'd be, sorry, I'm sorry, that was wrong. And I'm just grateful that I had that. But it's taught, I think, so many, if I may say, billions of people over the decades what it means to be human, what it means to live in a community where everyone participates, what it means to be equal. Because no one who has your same rights, that doesn't take away your rights. That doesn't take away anything from you. Equality is not a pie. There are not only so many slices to go around. It's for everybody. And so someone who has the same rights as you doesn't make you have less. And I think if we could all really get on board with that, we could get to that Star Trek future.
Yeah. And not only that, but the diversity of a community makes it so much healthier. So, I was just reading about the Neanderthals. The latest thing is that they died out because they didn't interact enough with humans. They started to lose the ability to figure out the latest thing that was going to work well. And they eventually died off. That's the newest thinking. And that's something we need to listen to. That diversity and thoughts and people having different thoughts is what keeps the motion forward for all of us.
I just have one last question, and I think I already know the answer to this a little bit, but what was it like for you carrying the weight of all of these stories over the writing of this book?
That's why I would go groom the dogs. It was like, I am overwhelmed. And there were many times I would reach it's like two floors up, and I'd reach the top of the stairs and my husband would know because he'd be standing there. And I go, I can't do this. And he go, just write it down. Just write the words that you're thinking. And there were times where it was hard to be so honest about my own thoughts, even about my own thoughts about other people's, how other people were depicted. And I would listen to, and I can never remember this artist's name, but the song Brave, and I'd listen to it. And she says, say what you want to say. Let the words fall out. I want you to be brave. And I would take that back downstairs with me and be brave and write the truth about myself and the truth of how I saw things. So it was hard. It was hard and it was overwhelming at times.
I don't know if I could have done it like you did it. And your writing is simply impeccable. I had no idea you were so good at putting sentences together.
Thank you. I wanted to be a writer as a young girl, but my family business was show business. And there was never, any thought other than that's what I was going to do. So that I got this chance late in life to write a book is pretty remarkable.
And it's a corker, if I may say.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Well, I just want to thank you so much for joining us. I really, truly appreciate it. And I think I've said it a million times. This book is incredible. I think every Star Trek fan needs to go out and read this. I know a lot of what I've been hearing is like, you know, a lot of young women need to read this and absorb it. And that is absolutely true. I think a lot of young men need to read this and absorb this and take this in as well.
I hope they do. And I love to hear you say that. Thank you so much. Thank you, both of you.
I guess one last thing I always like to ask all of the guests, is there anything that you are currently working on that our listeners would be interested in checking out? Anywhere we can see you, any projects you've been doing?
Nothing you can check out right now. I'm writing a film, an independent film with a young screenwriter, and we're developing that. But I'm understanding how slowly these things go. And we'll see where that comes. But that's what I'm currently working on.
Excellent. We'll have to keep our eyes out for that and our ears to the ground. Check that out for sure.
I'll definitely let people know.
Awesome. Fingers crossed. That's awesome.
Thank you. Thank you.
Well, again, thank you so much for joining us. And I hope to have you on again at some point for the documentary or the follow-up or anything like that.
But that sounds good. That sounds really good. It's been a pleasure to speak to both of you. Thank you so much.
Well, that was incredible. What a fun interview. I can't get over how awesome she is.
Me either. It's like, is she real? She's amazing. Absolutely amazing. I could have talked to her for another hour, two, three, four, whole day. Could have talked to her for a whole day.
Yeah.
just let her talk to me and just sit and listen.
Absolutely. What an amazing writer. What an amazing storyteller.
Yes.
Just so much great stuff in this book. I wasn't kidding when I said it felt like a PhD thesis. Like there's so much research, so much work that has gone into this book. It really is incredible. I urge everyone to go pick it up if you haven't already picked it up and read it. It's well worth it. So that's where I'm leaving off on that 5 out of 5, whatever scale we're using. Incredible stuff.
5 out of 5, Colonel Kiras.
I love it. This is a niche one. How do I do this? 6 out of 6 only torpedoes Deep Space Nine has and fires them all as a warning shot in the first episode. It's a little bit of a deep cut, but it's fitting for the subject.
Yes. I like that.
Well, thank you all so much for joining us. I really do appreciate it. And thank you to my wonderful co-host, Brandi Jackala, for this this incredible opportunity. I felt it important to include you in this. I thought it was important to have your voice in this video, and I'm really glad that you were able to make it.
I am really glad that you asked me to be here, because it was one of the greatest experiences of my life.
Awesome. Well, thank you everyone, as always, for listening and watching. And until next time, as always, stay positive. Positively Trek is produced and edited by me, Dan Gunther, and co-produced by Barry DeFord on Treaty 8 territory, the home of the Beaver, Cree, Dene, and Métis people, whose histories, languages, and cultures we respect. We acknowledge the many First Nations, Métis, and Inuit who have lived in and cared for these lands for generations.
Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
How do you feel when you switch to GEICO and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, "Happy Friday!" Then you check your phone quickly and discover today is actually Friday. So yes, happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.